The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Now moving on to our
The
next
Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
For breastfeeding, of course, many parents will have known the struggles that can be involved, and it's not for everyone. But is there something more we can be doing to help families and increase the numbers? I'm delighted to be joined now by Kate Mugwin, who is a lactation consultant, nurse and mum of four, and as well by Jen Hogan, journalist and mother of seven. Jen, maybe I'll turn to you. Breastfeeding week, what's the significance of this and what do we need to be doing better?
It's brilliant. It's great. It's World Breastfeeding Week. We need to be celebrating breastfeeding, but we need to more than celebrate it. We need to actually invest in breastfeeding, invest in support for mothers, invest in education, actually get the information to people and the support to people about so that women can actually make an informed choice about what they decide to do. Because, you know, World Breastfeeding Week shouldn't be about making women feel bad about the choices that they make, but we need to facilitate them to make supported choices and informed choices. And particularly in the middle of a climate crisis, you know, breastfeeding is a sustainable option, as well as obviously the numerous health benefits that perhaps aren't made public enough, that we aren't as aware of as perhaps we should be, and the sort of health benefits that would take immediate pressure off our crippled health system. And I suppose when you look at it, you'd have to kind of wonder why we don't invest more in breastfeeding information and support and things like that. Because maybe there's a bit of a conflict of interest there when you look at the fact that Ireland is the second biggest exporter of formula to China. You just have to wonder why, because having the dubious honour of having the lowest breastfeeding rates in Europe is not something any country wants to have.
And tell me this, Jen, because your point is absolutely crucial. This is about choice. This is about giving women all of the information and allowing them to make the best choice for them and their baby. What are the kinds of actions that you specifically would like to see to ensure that women have that information to be able to make the correct choice for them?
I mean, I suppose it could start in schools, couldn't it? A lot more education around breastfeeding, that we learn about it from a young age. We know what the benefits are from a young age. And honesty as well about the realities of breastfeeding, because it's a skill that needs to be learned by both mother and baby. It's not straightforward for everyone. Sometimes it takes time to develop it. But we need support in terms of lactation consultants. We need support in hospitals. The staff are under such huge pressure that there isn't necessarily time for people to spend with new mothers and help them to learn to breastfeed and to support women when they leave hospital too. You know, we're already hearing about public health nurse cutbacks. We need support for new mothers when they leave hospital, when they go out into the community. And the fact that we have such low breastfeeding rates, it means that perhaps there isn't necessarily the support there from previous generations who've been there, because rates used to be lower even further back.
Katie, that point about education seems to be absolutely crucial. Just, I suppose, from your own professional experience, what's there at the moment for mothers and what do we need to put in place for them?
Well, firstly, I'll wholeheartedly agree with Jen. Very good and valid points. Education is definitely something that we really need to highlight and focus. I think targeting the schools is an excellent point on the kids and I suppose the younger generation understanding the function of the breast and make it more normalised will lead to them considering to breastfeed as the future in kind of as time goes on. Looking at the antenatal period, you see loads of parents prepare during the antenatal period with regards to labour and birthing, and often infant feeding is one area that's neglected or a very short snippet targeted at. And I do think this apparent understanding what to expect when it comes to breastfeeding, understanding how to establish a milk supply, understanding normal newborn behaviour versus kind of possibly what is a red flag can make it a more very can really change and impact a mother's breastfeeding journey. I do think more antenatal preparation is key. I think better education even towards healthcare staff, making sure that everyone is singing from the same hymn sheet, because most of the time when I have consults with clients, the one thing that parents find very overwhelming is that they may be told something by one healthcare professional and another by another. So if we're all kind of saying the same thing and we're all educated to a very high standard, it can obviously reduce that kind of anxiety by parents where they feel a bit overwhelmed by the information they're giving. I think if we can improve our education, it leads to a better kind of more favourable outcome on the other side for parents as well. So education is definitely key, and then support is absolutely crucial. Some moms will go on to breastfeed and have no issues whatsoever, and other mothers will hit small little challenges, and others can hit major issues that need specialist help with an IBCLC. But we don't have the support that we used to have. Our parents breastfed or the community around us. So I think until we look at our support structures and financially the government putting in place better supports available to new parents, I don't see things changing hugely. We know that because our breastfeeding rates tell us that there's a huge drop off from when parents arrive home to when they, where if you look at beforehand what they have perceived, what they had hoped to, if they had hoped to breastfeed.
And Katie, in addition to those vital public supports, as you outline in terms of investment in education, how important are public attitudes, particularly from others who may want to breastfeed in public or in libraries or in trains or in workplaces? Is our kind of public culture and workplace culture set up to facilitate women to make that choice?
Well, I think every parent needs to know that they can breastfeed anywhere and at any time, and they can never be asked to cover up or to leave or that. But we do find still in, I suppose, in Irish culture and society, many women don't feel comfortable to breastfeed out in public. But I think that is changing with the younger generations. For me personally, I've never had any major issues where somebody's asked me to cover up. If anything, I've gotten very positive remarks. I think it's also down to sometimes the perceived feeling that, or the, I suppose, the fear that they have of the perceived reaction by others that many women will fear by feeding out in public. I think our younger generation are definitely more open and are more willing to challenge the social norms that exist today.
And Katie, tell me, so for the mother who, having got all of that information, still decides breastfeeding is not for her, what kind of advice or support do you believe needs to be put in place in those cases?
Well, like Jen says, I always believe in informed choice. And if a mother has made the decision either antenatally or maybe going through the process that this isn't the feeding option for them, then they should equally be supported during their feeding journey with their infant. It is all about informed choice. And this isn't pitting one group against the other. This is about all parents supporting each other. And there should be no judgment. No judgment should have a part to play here. We should be parenting is difficult enough as it is. And we should be pulling together to support each other regardless of how our infant feeds.
And Jen, just to go back to you, I mean, one of the interesting things, of course, is we are a very significant producer and exporter of breast formula, I think the second biggest exporter to China. I mean, is there a kind of a conflict of interest, or is there a kind of a tension between what industry does on the one hand and what this week, where Breastfeeding Week is all about, trying to kind of promote that informed choice among women?
To imagine so, because it doesn't make sense otherwise why there isn't more support for women in terms of breastfeeding and more education, particularly, as I said, with looking at our rate, but also looking at the climate crisis that we're living in. Breastfeeding is a sustainable option. It is something that perhaps we need the world to move towards, as well as obviously the benefits, the health benefits to mother and child. I mean, we have that situation, but we also have, I suppose, practices by formula companies which might be described as unethical because they're not obviously allowed to advertise first formula. So a lot of formula companies will move to advertising follow-on formula or toddler milk options. And these are things which are targeting parents. And they're getting around the legislation, they're getting around the rules. And really, instead of looking at, I suppose, maybe we do need to look at why we're not investing, and maybe we need to own that and look at that. But it is something that we are going to need to move towards, because as I said, it's not just a sustainable option, it's the healthcare crisis that we're living in. We're going to be coming into winter again. We know also Ireland is on course to be, we were on course to be the fattest nation by 2030. Breastfeeding is linked with lower rates of obesity. It's linked with lower rates of cancers in children and in adults. It's linked with lower rates of childhood infection, heart disease, things like this. We need to be looking at breastfeeding for the future and for the immediate benefits that we'd feel now, and when we would hopefully see the benefits of less children with winter illnesses and other such things.
Thanks for that. And we've a few texters in. One listener saying, I'm so sick of hearing breastfeeding being supported and this condescending language that states that the mother must be supported and educated, whatever their choice. We talk about benefits of breastfeeding being explained and educated more. When I was pregnant, I asked about combi feeding at an antenatal class and was publicly chastised for mentioning formula and was told we don't discuss formula at these classes. Two other texters, as regards breastfeeding, my experience with staff in the maternity units have no interest in helping or encouraging mothers with breastfeeding. You just get on with it yourself. And the last texter, my daughter got lots of help from nurses 7 months ago, but the baby was losing weight, so they decided after 4 months to change. So Jen Hogan and Katie Megwin, thank you very, very much for your time.
How do you keep track of the Newstalk summer cash machine every day? Do you write it on your hand, scribble it on some paper, or maybe you're just really good with numbers? Well, this week, we've got just one big giveaway, and it's worth €50,000. So give your pen and your brain a break. But don't forget to enter, and you could win a guaranteed €50,000. Simply text the word play to 57557. If we call you, answer within five rings and tell us the amount that day, and the cash is yours. Cost is €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You have to be over 18, and you're playing on the Go Loud network of stations. The Newstalk Summer Cash Machine. Terms are at newstalk.com.
Welcome back. It's Owen O'Brien here standing in for Ciarán on the Hard Shoulder this evening, discussing a range of issues in the newspapers and out and about. Just to let you know, I'll be taking your phone calls later on today. Telephone number is 1-800-453-106. That's 1-800-453-106. Or you can text on 53106, cost 30 cent, or email us on thehardshoulder@newstalk.com. Or indeed tweet us at The Hard Shoulder. Now, we've all heard of Big Brother watching us, but there has been news recently of employers paying closer attention to what people are doing at home in this new era of remote working. I'm joined by The Hard Shoulder's News Talks technology correspondent Jess Kelly to tell us more.
Yeah, this is something that has been used for quite a while in terms of different industries have been using tracking software. For example, there are call centres that may track how many calls a particular employee gets through on a day. There are famous examples in the US of workers who work in warehouses, for example, being fitted with monitors to see how many items they pick up from a warehouse and put on a delivery truck. So this type of technology isn't necessarily new. What is new is how widespread it is being used. Now, not to overstate the point here, not every company in the country is using this. It is still relatively small, I suppose, in terms of the instances. But we are hearing that companies are using technology that can track people's mouse movements, for example. There are other companies who can trigger screenshots on an employee's computer every 15 or 30 minutes to see what they're working on. And obviously, this has people's backs up for a few different reasons, which I think is natural enough. The first sort of question, I suppose, is, can they do this? Can employers do this? If you're working from home, so for the people, if you're listening to this now and you're at your desk at home, can your employer trigger your webcam to see what you're doing if you're at the desk first and foremost? Can they take a screenshot of what you're doing? The answer is, they can with your knowledge and your consent. They have to. It has to be. You have to be alerted to the fact that this could potentially happen, and to what end as well. We know my beloved GDPR. I talk about it all the time. From a data protection point of view, there's a hell of a lot of sensitive information that can be taken. Also, you know, if you have family photographs on the back of your fridge and your desk is near the fridge, and that could be in the shot, that is a point of concern. If you work in banking, finance, anything with very sensitive levels of information, that's a point of concern. So again, I don't want to overstate the point and say that this is coming down the tracks and everyone's going to be facing it, because that's not the case. But it's being tested out, particularly in the UK, and then some of the UK companies that are based here in Ireland as well, it's being deployed.
And Jess, just to be clear, what you're clearly saying is if there are any companies in Ireland operating this kind of practice, particularly in terms of screenshots or, for example, camera screenshots at home, what you're saying is those workers should have been notified in advance that this is a policy the company is pursuing. I presume if anybody has any concerns about this, the first thing they should do is contact their employer and ask them, is this a practice you're engaged in? Where is the policy? How are my rights and my GDPR being properly protected?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got a few different things. So there's obviously the European Convention of Human Rights, and then GDPR is the big one. And I think a lot of companies that are deploying this, very often it is in terms of productivity. It's not through lack of trust. They don't trust that you're doing your job. Very often if you are in, let's say, a call center type job, every call matters. And, you know, if there's a reason why you're on a call for 27 minutes instead of 12 minutes, maybe there needs to be efficiencies brought in. So there are legitimate uses where this technology can be beneficial. If your company has brought it in, however, and you don't feel they've given a satisfactory explanation for that, or if you do have any questions, it is worth engaging with them, because there are every company now has to have a data protection officer, and the compliancy around that is massively important. So it is worth engaging in a conversation. But as I say, I don't necessarily see this coming down the tracks in every industry here in the country. I just don't imagine it.
And given that this is another one of those examples of the technology is moving faster than maybe legislation and workers' rights protections, I mean, is this something we should hear from the Data Protection Commissioner on, just to set out very clearly what the official legal position is, so that workers themselves feel that they have the kind of the empowerment to be able to challenge an employer if an employer is operating outside Data Protection Commissioner rules, for example?
Yeah, there's been a lot of conversation about this, particularly since everybody started working from home in 2020. Obviously, initially, it was a bit slapdash, just get the job done, get through it. But now, as employers are looking to ensure that people are being as productive as possible when they're working from home, different elements can come into play. So absolutely, the Data Protection Commission is, it would be good to kind of get a strict guideline as to what can and can't be done. I do think that's pretty much in place with those different pieces of legislation I mentioned there, particularly relating to GDPR. But it's very much an issue for human resources and that side of businesses to ensure that employees understand why this is being done. Because you don't want to, like, you know, if my boss said, now we're going to track how many mouse movements you make, my initial thing would be, well, do you not trust me? And I think at a time when the job market, there's a lot of jobs, you know, out there, particularly in the tech space, we're hearing a lot of movement in that regard at the moment. And I think if employees don't feel trusted and if they don't feel respected, then there will be a bit of an uproar. If it is being utilised as it was designed to ensure that, you know, productivity and I suppose the most efficient way of running a business, that's one thing. But I think it's the sneaky nature that has people's backs up.
And I suspect there are some people who would question the relationship between mouse movements and productivity. But
exactly,
that's another day's debate. I mean, this kind of brings us on to that broader question, which is, look, we're in this digital age. We're signing up more and more to all sorts of apps and on our phones and our computers. And information is being gathered, collected, mined, and in many cases used for different purposes. You know, one of the ones I talk about a lot with people is Revolut.
Yes.
It's free service. It's super handy. More and more young people are using it. But do people really know what Revolut gather in terms of the data, what protections are there for the users of those service, and what Revolut are actually using that data for in the long run?
I would say, in short, no. And, you know, I've been talking about this for years now. When people get access to a service, they want the service. They don't want to read that tiny print, or, you know, the way sometimes it's highlighted in blue. You know, you can read our full terms and conditions.
Over 20, 30, 40, 50 pages of very complicated legalese.
And they're an absolute delight. So I went snooping today through Revolut's customer privacy notice for personal account users. You'd be delighted to know it's a 22-page document, so nice and short. But it's interesting to read through what they collect, when they collect it, and how they use it. So, for example, anytime you fill in a form or you correspond with any aspect of Revolut's business, they will capture the information. Some of the info will be your name, address, date of birth, bank accounts, your other cards associated with it, a copy of your ID, and your tax info. Also worth noting, when you set up a Revolut account, you have to take a selfie or sometimes a video. That is stored. Also worth noting, if you have your location services on, and this is a setting, and this is where, you know, we, the user, can take back an element of control. If you have the location on your phone on, Revolut can utilise that information. They say that it's collected and used to offer the service, protect against fraud, and potentially marketing. So, for example, if you are someone who buys lunch from a particular outlet regularly, you may get notifications or a reward through the app. This data can also be used for marketing. Now, this is where it's quite interesting, and this is where you need to kind of be eyes wide open with a service like Revolut. Their policy that is up on their website right now, you can go and read it. It says, we'll assume you want us to contact you, but you can opt out. And I'm going to talk through how you do that in just a quick second, but it is worth noting that Revolut won't sell your data. The way it does use your data is with social media companies for marketing purposes. So it'll use your name, email and your app events. So again, where you use the Revolut app to share with a social media platform so they can cross check. So they can look at my Revolut account and see if I have a Twitter account, for example. Then I may be offered ads about Revolut services. So if it's a product or service that I don't already use within Revolut, I may well see that as a result of this.
So they're not selling your data, but they are using that information to market their own services to you.
Back to you, exactly.
Okay.
Now, if you don't like this, if you have your phone in your hand, if you're a Revolut customer, take out your phone, open the app, and if you tap on your little profile picture in the left-hand corner, and if you scroll on down to privacy, you'll see the list of marketing options. So that's personalised emails, personalised pushes, social media and advertising platforms. If you're not into having any of that data shared, just switch all of those toggles to off and then it'll stop. So there are things you can do and you can take control.
Jess, as always, thank you very, very much. Coming up, Joe Malloy from Off The Ball as Tiger gets offered $800,000 to join the LIV Golf Tournament.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.